Mr. Clarkson, reel 15.
Leave, as you say, yes.
Yes. You struggle up from the station with your suitcase. You're fed up. You get aboard there. You go down the mess. And your leaf is up at 12 o'clock. And the rum has come up. It's there when you get there. And you swallow this top and you're at peace with the world. You are, you... It sort of brought you right back to where you left off before you went.
Do you find that men actually, or you, in your own case, did you... Do men begin to kind of build their lives around the 12 o'clock rum issue? Does it become very important in the
name? Oh, it is. It's a ritual. It's... Everybody's looking forward to a tot.
Yeah, yes.
And a tot, actually, is a matter of exchange, we'll say. It's a currency.
Yeah.
It's what tobacco is in a prison. You can get anything done for a tot where you wouldn't be charged anything. A tot is priceless, actually. A man will do anything for a tot. He'll do a job of work for you. You can buy all sorts of things for a tot. And though I say it can be dangerous where a man doesn't know when to stop if he can get it, you see. I remember the first tot I ever had. Now, you can't draw your rum before you're 20. So I had to wait till I was 18. And here, prior to that, when I was in the sewer, I remember a fella coming along and he'd lost his type. Stamped a name on his clothes. And he asked me if I wouldn't make him one. And I said, yes, I'll make him one. So I made him a type and naturally I didn't want to charge him. And then he said, take my top. Oh, no, I said, that's right. No, he said, no, and he said, take a tot. So when the rum came up, I drank his tot. I'd never had one before. Now, that is the most wonderful feeling I've ever had in my life. It is, I'll never forget that. And as I drank that tot and it went down, well, heaven seemed to open its gates. It was, I'll never forget that. And rum, it has... sometimes I suppose I had too much, but otherwise, it does bring a little bit of light into your life in the Navy, that the teetotalers are miseries. There's no doubt about that.
They have no compensations like that. They have no.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose in a way that in the Navy, in the kind of life that it is, day follows day with monotonous.
Yes,
regularity.
It is monotonous.
But the rum, the business, it's something...
You had that break.
It's a break. It comes
you had
in,
that
yeah.
break.
Yeah.
When I was on the Canterbury, we were the gunnery ship for Weyland, and we used to take out all the officers when they used to do their gunnery course. We used to take out all the gun layers who were re-qualifying, and those who were qualifying for the first time, 6-inch guns we had, and we've gone out from Portsmouth with the projectiles up in pyramids. Somewhere, I forget how many thousand rounds a week we used to fire. And we used to have the guns lifted out every so often, the muzzles. All the rifling used to stretch right out. Well, Easter time, we always had to take out the RNVR for their weekend. We used to curse them when everybody else was ashore. And this was our home billet, really. And off we'd go around to New Haven or somewhere and pick them up and take them out for their exercise. But we went out one Easter and it blew a gale. We had to pick them up at New Haven. We couldn't get in there on account of the rough weather. They were brought off in a tug and told to jump every time the two ships came level. And they were all seasick before they ever got there. And they jumped down, and of course our crowd was saying, "Get him!" Kicking them out of the scuppers. And then off we go down the channel. Eventually, we got to Portland, and we anchored there. And they revived then, but before that, when rum was up, of course, they were all entitled to their rum, and we were going round, we're saying, yeah, now drink that, look, it'll do you good. Just push it under their nose. Whoa, take that away. We done well out of that.
You make the point there, actually, earlier about rum and prisons, that it's like the tobacco issue. Is that how you would compare it, actually? It's that same...
I would, yes.
Same sort of significance in a man's life, in a way.
I'll tell you something. If you went ashore, you remember they used to have the cigarette coupons?
Yes.
Players, what was 7 pence for 20? And you used to have so many players' coupons there. The funny thing, that the people who used to collect these coupons were nearly all non-smokers. Mm-hmm. But they used to collect them by... They were, as a rule, teetotalers as well. And so people... I've done it myself, I suppose. Gone ashore and had a bit of a night out. And the next day... come aboard early in the morning and you'd have a terrific fat head. Well, the only thing to cure it was a hair off the dog that had bitten you. And naturally, you'd look for a tot. And you always knew where to go. Some of these very clean living people that used to save up their rum, and you go long to them and say, what is the rate of exchange this morning? They knew. And they used to push it up too. Because there was a sort of competition amongst them. If one knew what price one was given, he'd go up a little bit further or down a bit. And so he could go around and get a couple of tots that way. But by surrendering your coupons. To do that sort of way.
Yes, that's interesting. That's interesting. But again, the Navy, the rum issue was quite an important thing in a man's life, in fact, at sea. That could be used in a variety of ways as an asset, as a negotiable instrument.
It could, yes.
In a way, in this sort of
situation. But it was also, they took a very dim view of people, giving people their rum. That was, you weren't allowed to give anybody else your rum.
Yes.
Oh, no. On one occasion, this is very funny. It was to me at the time. I was on the Terror, the monitor then. And you've already heard me say how life was when we first joined in 7EE mess in the barracks. Where the coopers that were already installed, they used to eat all the best food. They used to have their meals first. They used to eat the butter. That's why they used to come along to us and say, we want another threepence off you. What's that for? For the extra butter. We never had any. We only had the margarine. All that sort of thing. Well, years afterwards, in the Terror, I suppose, 8 years afterwards, we're sitting down there one day and the... fellow said, he said, you remember what it was like in 7EE mess? And I said, I do, well and truly. We were well and truly robbed there, weren't we? I didn't know, but a fellow at the end of the mess, a cooper, he was the fellow who'd been the caterer of the mess at this time. I forgot all about that. And he eventually, I was lined up before the officer of the day. For bringing false accusations against a senior petty officer. And yeah, we fought that lot out. I was up before the captain eventually, and but we got rid of that. But he did say to the captain, I think he'd had a couple, sir. Which made a couple of tots. Oh, said the captain, you had a couple. Get up the president of this mess. Great big stoker PO, Jock Hamilton. And he was very annoyed, he was. And he said, does this petty officer have more than one tot? Certainly not. He said, what happens, he said, if there is any extra on there? Pour it down the scupper, said Jock. Brought up witnesses to prove it, although he never did. But that was that. But what had caused this? I'd never have said this. I would have had sense enough to know that this Bill Rose was at the end of the table. But the rum was of a different quality that day. You know, I told you that the steward used to come along with his little hand pump, a copper affair it was, and pump up out of the barrel. Well, then he used to take it back, and the steward always had a cabin, and in that cabin there was a wash hand stand where they used to tip the front up. And he'd evidently tipped it up at some time or other, and a bar of arsenic soap had fallen out in this corner, and he'd taken the pump out one day and stuck it on this bar of arsenic soap, and the soap went up inside. And the next day, they went down the spirit room and opened up a new barrel. And so, when the rum came up, cool, what's this? Scented it was. A lot of people wouldn't, well, they took it up before the officer of the day. He had the steward up and they said, well, this, I forget how many gallons this barrel, but they couldn't write that off. It had to be consumed, and they had to go through the routine, the daily routine, and get rid of so much a day until that was empty. The result was there was only three of us in the mess was drinking this rum, and we were having a very nice time. That was what caused this argument, actually. But I'd also sold an axe that I'd picked up at Chinnack, you know, up in the Dardanelles, and I sold that for $6. But this rum, we carried on drinking this rum. We were having a fine time until this barrel was empty. The only thing about it was that every time you burped, so you were scented, your breath was scented. It was wonderful. Anyway, I rather like that, but...
mess life, living accommodation, and what it was like to be in a ship in that, at that time. First of all, where would the artisans' mess, or first of all, who would you live with? In fact,
in my first ship, stokers. We didn't have many white stokers, if you can understand, because we had Lascars there, but we had two white stokers, two signalmen, two telegraphists, and myself. I think it was about 10 of us in the mess. Yes. Well, the next time, I think, it was like that all through that war. Well, then the next big ship I went to, I think, was the Royal Sovereign. There were 50 of us, over 50 in the mess. And in there was seamen, POs, telegraphists, torpedo gunners' mates, gunners' mates.
You could be quite mixed up. In
oh, fact. Yes, we're all mixed up.
You never artisans together.
No.
It was all
actually, I never liked being in an artisan's mess.
Did they have them, in fact? You could have, you know, it might happen sometimes that you could be with others.
Yes, actually, I don't think... There were very, very few artisans that wanted a mess on their own, because that is when you're isolated and you get funny ideas about other branches, because you don't mix with them. You can't make friends with them, and they always treat each other with suspicion. And
you found that yourself on occasions where you were, or where there was people in separate messes, that they began to cut themselves off.
And a lot of people get big ideas about themselves, especially tradesmen.
Yes.
They think that they're a little cut above the seamen. And then in the seamen branch, you get the gaity ones, the gunner's mates and people like that, who think that they're superior because they've got a lot more to say and they give the orders. They think that they're superior to the artisans. But the people that seem to insist always that all the artisans should be together are the warrant shipwrights and all that, because they know that while they've got their little band together, they know just when to pounce on them, they know where they are all the time. and you're more or less working on your own bus all the time, or living on your own bus.
Yeah, I mean, you're living with them, working with them. It's better if, obviously, if you can move around.
Yes.
And he doesn't know who you are, necessarily, or he might have to look for you. Would you get men who would try and avoid living with him? Would you get men who would try and avoid living in the mess he was, or he in the PO's mess? Would he be in a...
Who?
Your shipwright, chief shipwright, your commissioner, you know, your...
The chief shipwright wouldn't be there. He'd be in the chief PO's mess, you see, yes, with the chief telegraphist and the other chief PO's, seaman branch and all that. Oh, no, he wouldn't be with them, you see, no.
The idea was you moved around the ship if you could.
Yes.
And it might be about, how many to a mess, 10 or a dozen, about, approximately, to a mess?
Oh, more than that.
More than that?
14 or 15. Now, talking about that, was it, something struck me then. I was